Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2023. This is the Minnesota Senate Elections Committee called to order. It is 3:08 p.m. We have two bills on the agenda today. The first is Senator Murphy. Where is Senator Murphy? There she comes. Senator Murphy. She has been very busy this afternoon. Senator Murphy, proceed when you're ready.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I am not the only one who's been busy this afternoon, and so I won't claim any special dispensation for that that experience that we're all having together. But I am really happy to be here before the Elections Committee, Senator Carlson, and I wish I had a committee passport. I thought of this just yesterday. It would have been great at the start of this term to have a passport to get stamped for every visit that I made to every committee in the Minnesota Senate. And maybe I would try and get a visit in the Minnesota House, but I don't know that they'd have me anymore. But anyhow, I am delighted to be here today to talk with you about Senate File 2845, but more importantly and more generally to talk about the issue of our campaigns and the way that they are financed. And I know that that is the subject for discussion in this committee today, and I'm really happy to be a part of that discussion, Mr. Chair. So I would love a little instruction for how you'd like me to proceed.
And Senator Murphy, I understand you have an A3 author's amendment. Oh, I'm sorry. I do have to announce we do have a quorum. Yes. And you have an A3 author's amendment.
I'll move the A3.
We don't have
a quorum.
No.
We did have a quorum.
No.
I thought Senator Mitchell. No. Okay. And we had Senator Mitchell, too.
Here come some of the quorum makers.
Yes. Here comes the quorum. So, Senator Murphy, back to you have an A3 author's amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A3.
Thank you. Senator Port moves the A3 author's amendment to Senate File 2845. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay.
No.
The motion is adopted. Senator Murphy.
So, Mr. Chair, I am hoping that a page would be able to bring me a copy of the A3, just to make sure that I've got the right document before me.
Not in the packet.
Thank you.
And members, the A3 amendment is in your packet.
Mr. Chair, there has been a fair amount of discussion in this committee and in this body and in the other body, but more importantly, among Minnesotans in the last couple of years about our elections and about the state and the well-being of our democracy. And if you know me at all, Mr. Chair, you know that I like elections because I believe they are our choice together with our vote and the ways in which we participate to set the course for the future of our communities, for our state, and for our nation. And I hold that principle dear. I grew up in a family that loved to talk about politics, and I worked on my very first campaign as an eighth grader. My classmate's father ran for the Wisconsin State Senate, and I dropped literature in Beloit, Wisconsin for that candidate, and we also put bumper stickers on cars in the parking lot in the mall, and sometimes we did that without permission, which is something we shouldn't do in campaigns. I learned when I was in eighth grade. I haven't done that again. But I learned, right, that my participation mattered, even as an eighth grader, and when that person won that seat, I remember feeling like I'd had a part of that. And I believe Minnesotans participate in our campaigns because they believe their participation matters, and they participate in all sorts of ways. They participate with their vote. They participate by knocking doors, talking on the phone, talking to their neighbors, and they participate by contributing to our elections. And contributing to our elections financially or with our time and our talent are the ways in which we together set the course for our future. In my tenure in the Minnesota legislature, so since I have been elected in, I think it was 2006 for the first time, and my very first campaign was a very, very competitive campaign with every heat of the race. I sought the party's endorsement. There were five of us that sought the endorsement. I had a primary election. There were two of us in that race. And then I was in the general election where there were three of us competing for that seat. And altogether, I think on my campaign, I spent about $35,000. That was in 2006, not that long ago. It was a tight budget. We relied on a lot of volunteers. And we used time and sweat more than we use dollars in order to win that seat. But in a district, a House district, where you are trying to reach a subset of people to earn the election, it was possible to do that. Our elections have changed significantly since that race, in part because of the Supreme Court and decisions that they've made around the ways in which people participate in our campaigns financially. And over the years, what I have observed is that the voice of our candidate in connecting with voters is growing more and more diminished by the power of funding that comes from other places. And we operate under that set of considerations or rules or laws here in Minnesota. We do that across the parties, and I do that willingly and I do that freely, knowing that those are the rules that are set up for us. But I do think that for Minnesotans to make the choice for themselves for the future, it would be important for us to turn up the volume again on the voice of the candidates as they connect with the voters. And when there is an imbalance between the ways in which people participate in our campaigns with their financial dollars and the ability to compete with outside funds, it is growing harder and harder from my perspective for candidates, regardless of where they live, to effectively communicate with campaigns or with the voters and making sure that that is the center of our elections. And so I have been interested for some time in this discussion about how we're financing our campaigns, and particularly around the question of public financing of our campaigns. So for many years, we have in Minnesota had a law in place that allows people to make a contribution through the PCR and get some money back. That has been in place for a long time. It is a tool that many of us use. Individual candidates use it. Public, our political parties use it. It's something that people, when they don't know about it, can't quite believe it's real. And when they understand it, they take advantage of it. We also have a public subsidy agreement that we sign, and with that, we get a public subsidy in our campaigns. Earlier in the year, there had been discussion about a model called democracy dollars that most everybody in the legislature has said they didn't like very much. That idea that we would send to Minnesotans a voucher, if you will, that they would be able to then use as a contribution to a candidate. In other places, in other states, we are seeing the emergence of matching programs, small dollar matching programs that allow anybody to participate in the campaign, but with the emphasis on small donations, primarily within our districts, so that anybody of any means, if they're able to make a contribution, that that contribution would not only be matched, but it would be raised with public financing. So we are putting more of our emphasis again on the individuals, their voices, and the donors, the voters, in order to make sure that Minnesotans, the people of Minnesota, are driving our elections. So before you, you have now the A3 amendment that includes language around a small donor match program. And you have an idea about increasing the funding in the current grant program, which is the public subsidy that candidates receive regardless of party across the state of Minnesota. In this last election, I worked with a lot of candidates, and I know that there are others in this room that have done that very same thing, supporting people who are deciding to run for office. And one of the biggest barriers for a new candidate is their wonder about their ability to actually raise the funds that they need. It is a hard question, and it is a daunting question when you first run for office. I think the idea of increasing public financing for our campaigns for everybody regardless of party, regardless of geography, would help people make the decision to run and will help make sure that Minnesotans can participate regardless of wealth, regardless of their means, to be able to participate with their dollars and to help candidates raise the funds that they need, with an emphasis on a little less time into fundraising, a little more time into door knocking, talking with voters, making the argument for why we are the best candidates for the job, and connecting with Minnesotans in a way that brings them into the process of our elections to strengthen our democracy. I think this is a really important question for this legislature, and I understand that it is March 23rd of the session. And so this is, from my perspective, the start of an important discussion, not the end of an important discussion. And we all come to this discussion with our own experiences. We've all, many of us, have worked in campaigns. Many of us have been elected. We've come into these races from different places at different times, and those experiences shape us as well. So I would invite everybody, as you think about this proposal before you and the discussion ahead of us, that I hope is just beginning now, if you will think about it from the perspective of candidacy, if you'll think about it from the perspective of the people you know who participate, and if you'll think about it from the perspective of Minnesotans and their sacred role to participate in our elections, to bring us to this place to make decisions for the people of Minnesota, how important their voices are in that work, and the work that we can do together to make sure that their time, their talent, and their treasure are the things that are driving our elections moving forward. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to engage in the conversation with you and answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Do we have many testifiers that you have? I see you have some listed here. You have some, Ms. Lily Sass from We Choose Us.
Miss Sassy.
Sassy? Okay. And we can have Hallie Norman get on deck. Miss Sass, just identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lily Sassy, and I'm the director of We Choose Us, a campaign coalition of 35 community organizations working to protect and expand our democracy in Minnesota. We recognize the importance of the vote and have been working with many of you and excited about the work you've been doing to protect our freedom to do so. But we also know that having a healthy democracy is about more than just voting. Minnesotans know it too. When we cast our vote, we want it to matter. As we've talked to people across the state, knocking on doors, having conversations in parks, the thing we run into time and time again is an acknowledgement of the role big money plays in our politics and a perception that our elected officials are responsive to large dollar donors rather than their own voters. That is, in part, a result of Citizens United and other court rulings that have made an already inequitable system much worse, hollowing out the safeguards we did have and giving the uber-wealthy influence. Small donor public financing is one of the most powerful tools in the toolbox to put power back in the hands of voters, candidates, and their staff to run successful, authentic campaigns. Minnesota is one of the first states to recognize this when we developed our current system of public financing in the 80s and 90s. But as outside spending has increased and the cost of campaigning has become more expensive, our system is in urgent need of modernization. The best public financing systems seek to bring in more small dollar donors from all walks of life, incentivize candidates to participate, and make the reimbursement process as streamlined as possible, or better yet, provide the funds upfront or match them to skip the reimbursement process altogether. The proposal before you today will amplify the voices of local constituents while curbing the power of big money in elections. It gives candidates the freedom to run for office and govern independently of wealthy interests. And it allows candidates' voices to cut through the noise of outside spending so that voters, your future constituents, can hear directly from you. As someone who has also managed candidate campaigns, I can tell you just how important that is. We believe that Minnesota can be a leader again and put people, regardless of how much money they make, back at the center of our decision making. We encourage you to consider the match proposal before you today and think about how we can in the future allocate the necessary resources to sustain the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sassy. Please be sure to sign the witness listing. And Ms. Holly Norman.
Thank
please
you.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Carlson and committee members. Thank you for having me. My name is Holly Norman, and I am the Democracy Movement organizer with Minnesota Voice. And I'm super happy to be here to speak with you today in support of expanding public financing via SF 2845. Growing up in Seattle, I made my first campaign contribution because of public financing. This first donation began a pattern that has continued since all the way until today. And today I use our current PCR system at every opportunity. When I was a new voter, Seattle's system allowed me to participate before I could afford to make significant donations. And today the PCR program allows me to make donations that reflect my desire to participate, not only my financial capacity. Right now, though, we have an opportunity to modernize our system beyond what our current PCR program allows and build something that strengthens voter voice while engaging new voters at the same time. As a lifelong voter, every ballot I have cast has felt important, but the majority of an election cycle is not spent casting ballots, it's spent talking to voters. As many of us in this room have likely experienced, many of those conversations end in some variation of, "I don't feel like my voice matters," a refrain that voters share in spite of the issues they see impacting their communities every day. Minnesota can and should counter this narrative, and while we can't control every source of disenchantment with our election system, one thing that we can control is our ability to amplify voter voice through public financing. Public financing is powerful because of its ability to help all voters influence the outcome of their elections, regardless of financial capacity. When I see a candidate I donated to run an ad that speaks to the issues impacting my community, I know that my donation, not outside spending on their behalf, helped shape the ad's content. Inversely, when I donate to a candidate because I see them speaking on a certain issue, they know that they're speaking to the needs of their constituents and are incentivized to continue doing so. Either way, a publicly funded match increases the power of average people in elections. I have been using public financing systems for almost as long as I have been able to vote, and each time I do so, I see again the ways my and my community's voices are made that much stronger. It's a step towards leveling the playing field between big and small donors and is shown to increase engagement and participation among young people and people of color, working class voters, and voters across all spectrums. The match program in front of you today is an important step in bringing our campaign finance system into 2023 and would help ensure a robust, sustained public financing program for all Minnesota voters. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak, and I strongly encourage your support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Norman. Next up, we have Arlene Datu and Sharon Tornes. Please identify yourself for the record and continue.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Arlene Datu. I live in St. Paul, and I'm a leader in Isaiah and Faith in Minnesota. So I spent most of my professional life working as a member of working at a number of major corporations in Minnesota and Chicago. I left the corporate world in 2007, but I had long ago realized the truth about corporations. That is, they only look out for themselves. As a corporate employee, I was told time and again that we were the most important resource. They told us we're a team and we're in this together, when in reality, we were the first to lose our jobs when profits took a hit. Corporations prioritize their shareholders, who are often the executives and CEOs themselves, and only look out for their own investments. It's very clear to me corporate interests are very different from the employees' and the community's interests. Yet corporations and other special interests have massive influence on who runs for office and what issues they decide to talk about. I often felt pressure to give to our company's corporate PAC. Oftentimes, I wasn't told where my money would go or what it would end up supporting. It is absolutely essential that we change our current system to limit the influence of these corporate actors. In this last biennial election, we saw an influx of grassroots donors who felt empowered to elect leaders who represented them and their communities. But corporations funneled hundreds of thousands of dollars through many different and often dark channels. In order to create a system that works for all of us, we need to expand access to voting and make it possible for people's voices to count through both their vote and financial means. Right now, we are currently at a disadvantage against large donors, corporations, and wealthy special interests. Citizens United and other court rulings made an inequitable system even worse, removing safeguards in order to give corporations and the very wealthy even more influence. Small donor public financing, which stands on firm constitutional ground, even after Citizens United, is one of the most powerful tools in the toolbox to put power back in the hands of voters. It amplifies the voice of working people, ensuring that elected officials are accountable to their constituents and not large corporate donors. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Datu. Next is...
Mr. Chair, I'm taking Chair Antornis's place. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Hartnett, and I'm the Executive Director of Clean Elections Minnesota, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization that promotes electoral policies that reflect the will of the people and not the power of money. Thank you, Senator Murphy, for introducing this important bill. I'm here to testify in support of it. Senate File 2845 provides a four-time match for small donations. Public financing of elections has strong public support. 62% of American citizens support public financing, and 85% support fundamental change in campaign finance. A public match program will increase the power and influence of small donors and reduce dependence on big money. Match programs encourage legislators to look at to all constituents and creates a stronger relationship between them. They mean less time spent fundraising by elected officials. They support first-time candidates, can increase the diversity of candidates and the number of contested seats. It eliminates income as a significant factor for participation. They limit spending in political campaigns. At a time when the influx of large sums of money in politics threatens the legitimacy of our democratic processes and when cynicism is increasing among voters, this program becomes even more important. Legislators will not be beholden to special interests that seek to dominate decision-making. We ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hartnett. Do we have Elizabeth Schimmick here?
On Zoom.
Oh, she's on Zoom. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Carlson, and honorable members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 2845 and public election financing through small donor matching funds today. My name is Elizabeth Schimmick, and I'm senior legal counsel for campaign finance with the Campaign Legal Center. CLC is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting and strengthening democracy through law at all levels of government. CLC is a longtime proponent of public financing in state and local elections, and we commend the committee for pursuing avenues to modernize Minnesota's public financing program. While CLC has submitted a longer comment written in support of this bill, we wanted to share some of the highlights in today's hearing. Updating Minnesota's public financing program provides an opportunity to broaden public engagement in democracy and amplify the voices of ordinary Minnesotans in the electoral process. Small dollar donor matching programs, like this bill, and voucher programs incentivize candidates to maximize their outreach to residents, broaden their engagement with the electorate at large. Studies suggest this results in increased geographic and demographic diversity in campaign donors, including by race and income. These programs also embolden more people to run and be competitive for public office. By reducing barriers to entry, public financing increases opportunities for candidates from underrepresented groups and those who lack access to deep-pocketed donor networks to run for office. Finally, by increasing candidates' ability to rely on small contributions and public funds, these systems reduce the opportunity for corruption and the appearance that elected officials are beholden to major campaign donors. In conclusion, modern public financing empowers individuals to make meaningful contributions to the candidates they support, enhances voter ability to participate in electoral campaigns, enables more candidates to run for and win public office, and reduces opportunities for political corruption. Thank you for your time and consideration today.
Thank you, Ms. Schimmick. Next stage is, are there any amendments? Do we have any amendments? And let's go to questions. Any questions of the author? Senator Cram.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, what will be the path of this bill? Are you just laying this over?
We're going to be laying it over, Senator Cram.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and
Senator Cram.
Senator Murphy, I look at it, it looks like it's added. If this theory, I think, really is on the premise of the PCR program and the public subsidy, which we have both of. And I think we agree. I think we would find agreement that there is some need to hopefully push small dollar donors. There's been a theme here about dark money, but many are okay without state money. So I know this addresses part of that. But I think it adds a level of complexity and a lack of fairness to the entire program. When you look at, one, there's no dollar amount proposed, so we don't even know what that means. But when we look at something as a first-come, first-served basis, and then to have a callback or a recall on somebody that's over $50, or then that the we'd have a little bit more complex scenario of the matching it up to four times for a small donor, and then having to refund that if somebody inadvertently makes an additional payment that you may or may not know is coming into your account as a candidate, makes it very difficult and adds complexity. I think that's unnecessary. I think the one piece that I see in your bill, the moving the public subsidy side, the checkoff, the tax checkoff return, putting $5 million into the base instead of having $1,020,000. I think we probably find agreement on that, but not with the rest of these the other conditions. I think we have a better, more simpler solution to be able to address and to increase small dollar donors and to be able to get that voice that I think all of us want. To have a greater voice in us working hard and keeping us local with the small dollar donors. So for that reason, I can't support it. Thank you.
Senator Murphy, any response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Curran. And I'm grateful to know the areas where we may find agreement, especially around the PCR, which has been in place for many years here in the state of Minnesota, and it is proof point about Minnesotans' leadership on this issue. It's a program I've relied upon for many years. I think more than candidates, our political parties rely on the PCR. And I think that it is, in some cases, cumbersome. There's a fair level of administrative work on the part of campaigns to make that work, which then becomes, in some cases, a barrier. I also think that while it has been in place for a long time, and if we think about our work in campaigns as sides, both sides have employed sometimes one more than the other, depending on the campaign. But, it is something that it's in the ecosystem and we use it. I am thinking a lot about how to bring new people into this process. How do we bring new donors in? How do we make sure that they are able to participate? And I think that the PCR, while it is it is full of utility for our campaigns, I don't know that it is serving that purpose of new people, young people, a more diverse electorate. That's why I'm interested in something like a match that makes seeking out those donors, those very low donors in cases, a worthy endeavor for a candidate who often thinks about the work that they have to do in the limited amount of time that we have in a campaign. And time is something we never get back in a campaign. So I think there is value in considering that, and I hope that we can continue to talk about that. For the public subsidy and that grant, when I think about people, and now again, I'm gonna show my affection for campaigns. I live in a district that some people call safe. I don't like that language at all because I think it diminishes the power of voters and their choice. And any of us, wherever we live, wherever we work, should be working really hard to earn and continue to earn the support of the voters. That's why I don't like that term. But there are a lot of people who are Democrats who live in the district that I represent. It's one of those base districts full of Democrats. And there are other people who are in this body who represent base districts that are full of Republicans. Then there are people who run for office in swing districts, and there are people that run for office in districts that don't match their partisan makeup much at all. So the person who chooses to run in the district I represent to compete with me has a disadvantage because the voters aren't very tuned into that voice. It's hard for those candidates to come into the race and really make a mark. And our democracy benefits, while this may be unpopular for some of us, our democracy benefits, the debate benefits, and the choices voters make benefit when there's a robust campaign. So while I live in a district, and if I continue to do my work and do it well, I'll probably be reelected in that district unless I break into some sort of scandal. I like the competition that comes with, and I've been in competitive races before. It makes me a better candidate, and it makes the outcome for Minnesotans better. That's why I'm interested in expanding the grant, because it gives more people a little more money that they can count on, even in the places where it's going to be harder for them to get elected.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Grant.
And so, Senator Murphy, and I think, and I've had conversations with Senator Rest, and I think we share all of the goals in which you just described. And so I'll talk a little bit more because we have another bill right after yours. But that's exactly what we're talking about is we'll bump it up a little bit, right? I think because we know the process, it works, and it's fairly low cost, affordable. But also have everybody here as my commitment. And in 98, I had a proposal to automate the entire process when I was at the Department of Revenue between the two parties to tackle the things that you just talked about. How do we simplify the receipting process? Should somebody have to make application? How do we simplify the ability to push that back, and can we automate portions of it? So Mr. Sigurdsson is going to get a request from me. So we can sit down and look. We've got a new, because I think there's a couple things that are happening here. We have a campaign finance system, which is now moving online. We're going to have an easier, as a candidate and a team management perspective, the ability to enter those things more timely and with other additional resources, maybe not your treasurer, but those people that you appoint. And then how do we marry those things with the Department of Revenue to simplify and do automatic issuance for as many as we can? And so that, you have my commitment. I think we could work together and come up with a really good process, making sure to do to meet the goals in which you just stated, and to simplify it across the board. So you have my commitment on that.
Thank you, Senator Grant. I think you've gotten a lot of agreement here. Senator Murphy, any comments on?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I've got Senator Westland on my list here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Murphy, for bringing this forward. Thank you for your passion regarding elections. I share your passion. And I do think that I'm not viewing this as an either-or proposition. My understanding is there's still a proposal, we'll be hearing that bill regarding PCR, but it is my understanding that for someone who has a hard time making a $50 contribution, they'll have a doubly hard time making a $100 contribution. And so the people who benefit from the PCR may still be the same sort of small universe of people. With this particular program, there are incentives for candidates to really focus fundraising in their districts and to focus on people who maybe can only give them $5 or $10. And right now, you know, the time and expense that goes with trying to focus on really small dollar donors, you know, you're always weighing sort of the cost benefit. What can I spend my limited time doing? And I agree with you, Senator Murphy. I think this does make us focus more on our time more easily on voters and making sure that we are focusing on folks whose voices maybe we don't prioritize at this point. So I do have a couple of questions given that little brief statement in support of this bill. I think it's a great idea. So I know Senator Curran raised the issue of what if somebody makes a contribution and at some point that contribution has to be refunded for some reason. Do you have an idea of what the logistics would look like in terms of what happens with that match? And would that be refunded, and how that process would work if someone has made a donation? Or I could ask Mr. Sears.
Senator Murphy, calling in a friend.
I am. By the way, he offered.
Mr. Sigurdsson, please identify yourself for the record and continue with your answer.
Chair Carlson, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Sigurdsson, Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. As Senator Curran mentioned, the board is rolling out this year an online application to replace the PC-based software that most of your committees have been using to report. I believe that our plan is to, however this moves forward, and this was heard in the other body, so we did a fiscal note for that body, that the software would be modified to identify any time an individual went over that $50 limit, so at that point the committee could return the amount over $50. And the bill does provide, I believe, various ways in which that can be accomplished. So it would be a matter of setting up a new compliance rule basically within the software to identify those individuals.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Weissman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Sigurdsson, I think I can speak for all of us when I say yay for the online. Thank you. So I guess another question that I would have is, are there other jurisdictions or other states that have successfully implemented this program? What's sort of been the feedback from those jurisdictions? And have you heard from folks in our state about whether or not they support this particular plan?
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Weslin. We heard from a number of testifiers who have interest in both of these ideas and interest in the small donor match. There are other jurisdictions, New York State, Montgomery County, Maryland, and others who have begun to explore small donor match or voucher program, which is something we're not talking about today. But yes, we are starting to see in other parts of the country efforts to try and build out the ways in which we are using public financing to make sure that voters have a full opportunity to participate in our campaigns.
Just one last
Senator
question
Westland.
Then. So I believe I heard you mention this, and just maybe to elaborate on this a little bit. I think part of what this does, or part of building out our public subsidy grant, generally speaking, in a way that equalizes the amount of money people are receiving. I believe I heard you testify to this, and I would tend to agree with this, that what it means is every candidate at least starts with kind of on equal footing. And it means that people who are running in super blue districts from a different party who may have difficulty raising money, that this may actually make it easier for them to do so and to be competitive, at least to be able to do some of the things that one needs to do in a campaign, and vice versa. Someone's running in a particularly red district, for someone who's challenging the Republican in that district, someone from another party would have the means to at least run a decent campaign. And I think lastly, I think it also provides the opportunity for a much more diverse group of candidates to run for office, so that we can have different voices and new voices. And so I think I heard you say those things, and I just wanted to lift that up again and maybe give you an opportunity to speak sort of specifically to how this helps candidates who may otherwise under our system be running at a pretty significant disadvantage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Senator Weslin, I think about the question before us through the lens of candidacy, candidates, but also for voters. And first and foremost, I want to center voters in this, right? We want to make sure that voters are able to make an informed choice. And when our voices as candidates are diminished because there is a lot of external money, it makes it harder for our message to come through clearly. And in the end, I want, and I believe we want together to make sure that our elections are being driven by voters who are making informed choices. I can't tell you the number of times I have talked with people about running for office, and the reason they cite that they don't want to do it is because they don't think that they could raise the money that they need to compete. It is an instant barrier. And while I found it harder to ask somebody for a vote than it was to ask them for a contribution when I ran in the beginning, that's not the case for most people. It is awkward at best to ask somebody to make a financial gift to your campaign until you maybe have your legs underneath you. And it is a barrier for many people. And Minnesotans often feel a barrier. And we heard this in our testimony as well. I'm not sure I want to participate. I'm not sure my voice matters. I'm not sure my small dollar contribution makes a difference. That's also not only a barrier for participation for voters, but it is a signal to us that we should be considering how to make changes to our electoral and financing system so Minnesotans have faith in it, because Minnesotans having faith in that means Minnesotans have faith in our democracy, and in the end, that supports our work here.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Murphy, for bringing these bills. I, like you, share a love of campaigns and have worked with a lot of candidates across the state in various different phases of deciding if they're going to run, and then running in very different sized races across the state. And so I can see both of these proposals helping those candidates. But like your last comment, I find, especially in the legislature, when we start talking about public financing or financing of elections, we often look at it from the candidates' points of view, because we're all candidates. But really, as I've been reading these, I've been trying to think about it from the voters' point of view and what it means to voters, because I really think in the last several years, voters have told us they are worried about our democracy. They want their voices heard. And that is something that I think we need to take really seriously and center in this argument. And so, you know, for me, it's really easy to see with the small donor match program that would be an incredible tool to bring people into the process. If you can only donate $5, $10, $20, but now your contribution is worth the same as someone who can give $50 or $100. If you can give $50 and now your contribution is the same as someone who can give, you know, $200, that amplifies your voice, and it amplifies the power of spending time in your district talking to voters who do not have a ton of money to give you. Which I think could really have a profound impact on shifting where candidates' time is spent and focusing that back more on the voters in our districts. I like that the program centers on donors in your district. Right now, I think all of us probably get contributions from a significant number of people who aren't in our district, who can't vote for us, but for whatever reason we have a relationship with, or we got on a donor list for, or somebody, you know, got connected to us in some ways. And that's all well and good, but it does shift our focus away from the voters in our district. So I really appreciate that portion of the small donor match program. But I will say, even increasing the public subsidy piece, to me, also focuses on the voters, because I know for myself as a candidate and other candidates I've worked for, time is the only finite thing you have in a campaign. You can raise more money. You can always raise more money. There's always one more donor to call. There's always one more person you can ask. You can always go knock more doors as long as you have time, but time is the thing that is finite, and we have to choose where to spend it. And so the less time that, as candidates, we can be forced to choose to spend it on fundraising, the more time we have to engage with our donors. So I think both of these proposals really give us an opportunity to spend more time in our districts, to spend them talking to voters rather than donors, to bringing new people into the system, which I think is sorely needed. And I think they both have not a focus on increasing the amount of money in campaigns, but on increasing the power of the voters' voices in campaigns. So I just mostly really want to thank you for bringing these. I think it's a needed discussion. I am excited that we are having it in this committee. I'm glad we're going to continue having it after this bill, but I just mostly want to thank you for bringing these proposals forward.
Thank you. Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, there's a lot of things in here that you and I will probably agree on philosophically, and the way the bill is written, maybe not practically. I would like to ask first, do you envision this as being in addition to PCR or to run parallel or replace PCR?
Mr. Chair and Senator Barr, I don't have any intention of replacing the PCR. It would be in addition to the PCR.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy. So with that being said, it almost seems like this is would work better if it was implemented into the PCR system, combine the two, because $50 limit, and especially if the automation system is coming, there is, you know, you could do a $5 recurring payment and would be easy enough to set up that your five turns into 20 if it's in district, but somebody's going to have to control all of that, and it's almost like reinventing the wheel. I mean, we already have this system that's going to be automated. Combining the two together may be a little bit easier approach to put this together. But since we're going to just talk kind of blanket how our elections are working, I thought I'd share a few thoughts of mine. I was raised in Illinois. So Lincoln-Douglas debates is a big deal where I came from. There was one, there's still plaques and posters, I mean, metal monuments in the ground where there was a Lincoln-Douglas debate. And we have moved away from, when those things happened, it was an all-day event. The candidates would get together, they have a short stage, and people would be all the way around. They'd bring picnic baskets. It was an all-day event to hear the candidates discuss the issues of the day. These particular Lincoln-Douglas debates happened all over the state of Illinois, and it would just be advertised in the paper, and you come meet your candidates, and the actual electioneering wasn't with a postcard in the mail, or wasn't who wins the sign war, and it wasn't who can knock more doors, because I can tell you that knocking doors is like, why are you disturbing me? I'm eating my dinner. I was trying to sleep. You run into a lot of people have different schedules, and I don't know what their schedule is, and you end up showing up at the wrong time, and you are off on the wrong foot before you even start. So raising the money to do to get out and do like your postcards and your signs and everything else, I get all of that. Put ads in a newspaper, things like that. I get where the money part of this goes. Obviously, we have all done it to get here successfully to get here, but I would really like to see something drastically changed from where we are now. I like the idea of the small donor program, the PCR, raising that limit. I don't have any problem at all with that. I would like to see something more towards Lincoln-Douglas debates where every candidate in every district will have two or three long-form debates. I have participated in many. Every time I've participated in debates and you have 30 seconds, 45 seconds, maybe a minute to answer the question, and you don't get a rebuttal opportunity. So a long-form debate where you can take 10, 15 minutes to actually flush out an idea and actually explain where you're coming from, how you view something, and then your opponent gets to answer and you get rebuttal. You actually, the voter will receive more from that than anything else. So just having more long-form debates, I would be welcoming the idea of, instead of a public subsidy, the state would sponsor debates for the candidates in a long-form discussion as opposed to you've got 30 seconds to answer a question. The other piece that I want to just kind of dive into a little bit is we hear a lot about Citizens United. And the one thing I think that Citizens United got right was that unions and big business were not on the same plane. And they put them on the same plane. The problem is I think they put them on the wrong plane. I think that business was kind of restricted in the first place, and the unions should have been restricted in the same. Because as union, you collect dues from your union members, but you don't know how those union members are all going to vote. So giving donations to a particular candidate or a particular stripe of candidate without actually going back to the member and saying, we're going to donate X, this much is yours, how much do you want to spend? I think that put them on the wrong plane. Instead of reducing, they amplified the amount of money in politics. And I think we've all heard we have too much money in politics. So I'm just going to throw an idea out here, which probably will not be liked by many people, but I think all ads, IEs, TV ads, party ads, all of it should run, if it's running, it has to go through somebody's campaign. And it has to be approved by the campaign, the person with their name on the ballot. So if the DFL wanted to run an ad for you or the RPM wanted to run an ad for me, it would have to run through my campaign and I would have to actually sign off on that campaign before it ran, including all the independent expenditure groups, so that things go through a candidate and you make sure that you have the opportunity to say, this does not represent my views. I do not like this negative campaigning, and I have never negative campaigned. This is what my beliefs are. This is how I want to present myself to the public, not my opponent is an evil SOB and blah, 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 and try and drive them into the ground. I don't think that does anything except make all of us look bad. I have never campaigned that way, and I have no intention to ever campaign that way. But we have this problem of all these outside groups. And you almost got to a piece where I really like with the four times in district. I don't think anybody should be able to give me money if they can't vote for me. That's my simplistic way of putting it. There's not a corporation and there's not a union that votes anywhere. None of them can vote. Their members can vote. The employees of a corporation can vote, but the particular corporation can't vote. A union can't vote. And why should somebody in Minneapolis come put money in my district or I put money in a neighboring district for a candidate when I can't vote for them? That should be restricted to the candidates there. Statewide candidate can collect anywhere in the state. A state rep inside your district, and if you can, you're staying within your confines. These are the people that can vote for me. Why should I collect money from outside of that? And it will keep us concentrated inside of our districts. But I have obviously used way too much time on the committee's time here, and those are some of the ideas. And if any of those appeal to you, I would be more than happy to work with you on those in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Senator Barr. I like those ideas, and you know, this committee has 3.5 more years to go, so we can work together on that. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Any other questions? Any other comments? Senator Murphy, you have Senate File 2485, and we will be laying that over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you so much for making time. This is an important conversation, and I'm glad to be part of it.
Thank you. Mr. Sigurdsson, I don't know if you're going to be called up, but you may as well keep that seat warm.
Okay. Thank you.
We have another bill, 1405, and I believe, Senator Curran, you're going to be... Oh, we have a...
Senator Rest is here.
Oh, Senator Rest is going to do it. Okay. I had Senator Curran.
Mr. Chair, I got kicked back to the bullpen or the bullpen before I even got out of it. Yeah. So.
Okay, Senator File 1405 will be presented by Senator Rest. Senator Rest, just proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Curran, who joins me as a co-author on this bill, was going
Senator Rest, can you please bring the mic as close
Senator
as
Curran is my co-author, and he was going to present on my behalf. I thought it was going to be in capital investment, but they're not to me yet, so I'm happy to be here speaking on behalf of Senate File 1405. The upshot is it is a doubling of the PCR, but I think what's what is important for all of us, because I think most of us don't know the details of the PCR program. So I am going to go through the provisions, even though the real change to current law is to just double the political contribution refund program that's currently in place. In section one, it does, that's where it provides the maximum refund, and this is for individuals, doesn't exceed $100, and for a married couple filing jointly, it doesn't exceed $200. It requires that if you want the refund, you have to file a form that is provided by the Commissioner of Revenue, and this is a program that is run through the Department of Revenue, not through, as Senator Murphy's bill provides, through the Campaign Finance Board. So that is a big difference. But if you get that form and it's easily available online, you attach that to the refund receipt that we get and that we hand out either electronically if we use Campaign Finance Reporter or through a package of receipts for the donor to send into the Department of Revenue in order to have some accountability with it. The receipt forms are numbered. Maybe we don't always notice that, but they're numbered, line 1.15, and the data on the receipt that are not public must be made available to the Campaign Finance Board if they request it. That claim then, when can you get it and when can you ask for it? Can't be asked for prior to January 1st. I'm looking at line 1.717 of the calendar year in which the contribution was made. And so for us, and that means that you you can't apply for it in December of 2022 for a 2023 refund. You have to wait until after that. And then then you have no later than April 15th of the calendar year following that, the calendar year in which the contribution was made. You can only do it once a year. So if you give $10 in January and $15 in April, if you're anticipating doing that, then you hold on to the receipts and send them in at once, because you can't apply for it more than once during a calendar year. The amounts that are paid, now I'm looking at 120, by the commissioner after June 15th of the calendar year, following the year in which the contribution was made, actually must include interest. I don't think we see that very often, but that is a requirement. On page two, you can't be given a refund for a contribution unless you have meet three requirements: that you've signed the agreement to limit campaign expenditures, that you're seeking an office for which voluntary spending limits are specified in the law, and that you actually have a designated principal campaign committee. We're not talking about checks made out to a person. They need to be made out to, or online or whatever, and they need to be made out to to your campaign committee. And they can also be made to those contributions to a political party, and that means a major political party or a minor political party. And we've had discussions in this committee about what should be the requirements to meet the designation of a major political party, but it doesn't, that's not affected by who you give a contribution to. The candidates that may make use of these are all of us here, certainly, but it is not allowed to candidates running for judicial office. It also means a contribution made in money. We accept and use contributions in kind, but only contributions in money can be used to qualify for the political contribution refund. If you look at data, we're always concerned about the security of our data. The following, the data that is collected and maintained by the Commissioner of Revenue are private. That means they're available to the person about whom they are, but they're not available to the general public. The identity of the individual claiming the refund, the identities of candidates to whom individuals have made contributions, and the amount of each contribution. That information, which is made available to the Department of Revenue, is private. And then, starting at line 2.25, the commissioner then has a duty to report to the Campaign Finance Board by each August 1st a summary showing the total number and aggregate amount of political contribution refunds, and that data is public. The moving on to the money is also provided to the Commissioner of Revenue to make sure that there is enough money to pay the amounts that are claimed on the PCRs. And then there is a recognition that the claim may be made for the refund electronically, and that is dealt with. The effective date for this change, major change, the only change really, is the doubling of the amount that's available, and it starts on January 1st of 2023. When we come to a vote on this bill, I will be moving that Senate File 1505 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you, Senator Rest.
And Mr. Sigurdson is here to speak to a little bit more history of the PCR and also to answer any questions from the Campaign Finance Board's point of view.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Any comments, Mr. Sigurdson?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I asked Senator Rest if it would be all right if I just spoke briefly to the PCR program. You may recall the first time I appeared before the committee this year, we talked about legislative recommendations, and one of them was that the board recommended even a higher PCR number of $200 and $400. That was primarily to get the legislature's attention to the decline in the effectiveness of the public subsidy program, both the PCR program and the campaign finance payments directly to candidates that you were talking about at the last bill. But for example, the PCR program, which again is supposed to help you get contributions from local Minnesota residents, in 2007, 58% of all contributions from individuals paid to candidates were refunded through the PCR program. So it was effective in raising over 50% of all contributions that candidates received from individuals. In 2008, that came down to 45%, but that sort of makes sense because if you think back in, at that point in time, non-election years had a lower contribution limit than in election years, and so it was easier to get up to the maximum amount that you could give and still have it refunded through a PCR. But basically, we were looking at about 50% of all contributions for that two-year period. The most recent numbers that the board has for 2020 and 2021, in 2020, only 16% of the contributions received by candidates were refunded through the PCR program, and in 2021, that was down to 13%. In raw numbers, in 2002, which was the high point, $3.3 million were refunded to candidates, or I should, excuse me, were refunded to donors of candidates through the PCR program. And in the most recent year, 2021, only $618,000 were refunded. So not even a quarter of the amount that was refunded in 20 years earlier. So the program has lost its effectiveness in the board's opinion in terms of being able to draw in contributors and have them participate in the program. The other information I have relates to the checkoff program, which I recognize we're not talking about here, but just again for a little bit of background information. In 1977, remember this is where the taxpayers have the option of checking off for a party on a tax form. 27% of all taxpayers checked off for a party. In 2021, that number was down to 3.6%. So when I occasionally get calls saying, how come the public subsidy payment I have is smaller than it was 2 years ago, it's because the source of funding is going down. And so both sides, the PCR, or excuse me, the political subsidy program, I think need, the board believes needs attention, needs to be refurbished. And I recommend or appreciate Senator Ress bringing forward this bill to look at that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sirkis. Any questions? Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sigurdsson, to that information you were saying there towards the end on the decline of the program over the years, do you, we've talked a little bit today about options that we have to bring more people into campaigns, into being active participants in democracy. Do you see that this change, in your opinion, will this bring new people into the program, into our democracy?
Mr. Sigurdsson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Port, I would have two answers there. I believe it will in terms of, I think at this point in time, some people just aren't willing to do it for $25. I mean, it just isn't willing for them to say, okay, I can get the $25 back from the state, but then they're going to say, well, I'm just not going to do it at all because it's not worth the time to get a piece of paper back, fill out a form, find a stamp, find an envelope, mail it in. So I think that they may be more willing to participate if all of a sudden they're looking at a $200 or $100 ability to get a refund. And this is my opinion. I do think that if there is a way of approaching this to make it less paper intensive and more of something that the candidate does for the contributor as opposed to the contributor doing it for themselves, if there's a way that again, the software that the board is developing, if that can be part of the process, obviously the Department of Revenue needs to be part of that conversation as well, then I can't imagine that would hurt if there's a way of simplifying the process for the donor.
Thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson. Any other questions? With that,
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator.
Yeah, no. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Estin. You know, we share the desire to make these, you know, same with Senator Murphy's. We share that desire to, how do we make these things work better? And Mr. Sigurdsson, as well, I think you will be getting a meeting request from me, and we'll collaborate, because I think between the desire, you know, which I think will be bipartisan, be a great opportunity to work on it, but I think we can simplify it across the board. And so we'll be seeking a demo of the new software. Senator Westland was maybe celebrating a little prematurely. I'm on to prove it's a great new system. So, but I do want to see it. I think it's going to really enhance our ability because, what is it, 30 years old today? And but I think there's going to be a way that we can really simplify it for both the donors and to really encourage those the small dollar donors as well as the refunding piece of it to more automate those things in everywhere we can. There is some sensitive information, Social Security number and things like that. But I think if we put our heads together between the Department of Revenue, Campaign Finance, and a few of us, I think we can really come up with a good process. So this, I think, helps us get, right, increases the donations for the smaller donors and for candidates. And we all agree that local dollars are better. But that's going to be our commitment, is to work on that and see where is it now that we have some modern campaign finance collections and I think more timely ability to put that data into campaign finance as well. So we'll look at those things and I think come up with a much better process and improve it everywhere we can to start to achieve the goals that were stated by everybody here today. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Grant. We do have a another testifier who would like to come up and speak, and perhaps
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rast. May I just respond to Senator Curran? I'm very excited about the ideas that he is proposing in terms of streamlining and making it simple. Imagine, if you will, you get a check from someone, you go and enter it in the campaign finance reporter. I'm assuming almost everybody, I mean, you're required to file through that unless you have a reason for not doing it. So you put it in the system, you have their name and address that can be checked against the Department of Revenue. The campaign finance requires other additional information for the most part at higher levels, employer or whatever. But you put you write their name in the campaign finance reporter, you enter that information, and you push send, or you push do it, and then automatically there's no receipt that is needed. It just is recorded at the Department of Revenue, who then sends out a check. So there's no postage. I mean, if you want to write a thank you, fine, but you don't have to do it on a piece of paper with a receipt. You can send them an email or a text saying thank you, but that's between you and your donor. But when you put that dollar amount in, the check is automatically generated by the Department of Revenue and sent to the address that you have identified as that of the donor. The two addresses, Campaign Finance Board and Department of Revenue, have to be the same and recognized. And I think it's an enormous saving of time. It's likely to be far more accurate, and it's an incentive, in my mind, for donations as well as making it an easier job on our campaign treasurers. So I'm really excited about the conversations that are going to occur between Senator Curran and others who are interested, and the Department of Revenue, and the Campaign Finance Board. And that approach doesn't have to be limited to PCR either. I mean, it's a way of double checking on the contribution, and could be certainly applied to Senator Murphy's bill as well. If we go forward with that, it's a saving to the taxpayers. It's a saving for the program, and it I think justifies also the doubling of it for more than one reason. And certainly the reason that Mr. Sigurdsson identified is a very important one, more participation.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Senator Curran, and I think
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, yeah, Senator Rest just described it. I mean, I think when we put our heads together, we can get into a position where we do an auto issue you know, for those small dollar donors. And I think that will accomplish a lot of those stated goals of the loyalty, right? Well, there's plenty of issues to work out, but the loyalty of the ability to recycle that $10 or that $50 donation multiple times with some frequency, I think will then build that donor loyalty in the small dollar side for all campaigns across the state. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Grant. And now for our testifier.
Yes, okay.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sharon Tornis. I'm a member of Clean Elections Minnesota, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that promotes electoral policies that reflect the will of the people and not the power of money. Thank you, Senator, for introducing this important bill. We support Senate File 1405. Public participation in the political contribution reimbursement program has been declining, and this bill gives it a needed boost. Public financing of elections strengthens our democracy. It increases the proportional importance of small donors and average Minnesotans so that candidates do not depend as much on large contributors, lobbyists, or special interests. A study by the Center of Governmental Studies stated that Minnesota's public finance program has for decades been considered one of the finest in the nation with a higher participation rate than other states. 88.5% of candidates participated recently. Raising the refund will increase its effectiveness. And we urge your support for this bill. And also, I'd like to mention on the checkoff thing on your tax form, maybe emphasizing that more on a tax form. You know, I mean, when you look at that form, your mind dulls anyway. And plus, a lot of people have their forms prepared by professionals. So, you know, maybe that would help. So that's it.
Thank you for your testimony. You. Any other questions or comments? With that, Senator Rest, I'm going to take a little bit of chair prerogative here, and I'm going to have Senator Curran make the motion for 1405 to be recommended to pass and be forwarded to the tax committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recommend pass Senate File 1405 to be placed on general orders.
Thank you.
No, it has to go to the tax committee.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the tax committee. And Senator Rest, Senator Rest is going to carry the that in her number as well. So that's fiscal note. So, yes, make the motion to move Senate File 1405 to the tax committee.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Senator Rest, you're headed to your committee. So with that, that is all the business we have on the list today. So the meeting is adjourned. You got it easy today.